Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
One is commanded by the Dark Trio, and one simply obeys. Hello, it's Elliot from Tasmania here. Hope you're doing well. I do apologize for my recent lack of communication. I did have a question the other week, but somebody beat me to it. It was about remakes and reboots and all that good stuff. I was going to suggest that perhaps Pixar could do a remake of the 1982 film Something Wicked This Way Comes, as I think it's a good story to be told in the form of animation. Which made me think, what is some good animated horror that you could recommend to us listening several? I personally would be interested to know because I like animation and, of course, I like horror. I hope everybody's doing well and that you're looking after yourselves. Take care now and I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Thanks, Elliot. I always appreciate it when people take me up on my pleas. I am going to immediately hand this off to Zena.
Me? Wow.
Yeah, you.
Okay, hi. All right, well, it was a while ago. This is an anime, but I told you guys about this one called Hells, about this girl. She's going to school and then she dies. She gets hit by a bus or something and then they send her to hell somehow. And then she tries to escape. But it's pretty cool because it's like gory. There's some blood in there. Also, if you want more like bloody anime, I got you. But animation wise, I'll go with that. I'm going to talk about, I guess, because I have like a long list, but I'll just do like my favorite. God, it's so hard. Okay. I want to go with Monster House. That's animated. You know, it's animated. So
you don't
I'm
have
go
to.
That
yeah,
one.
There's no argument. It's animated.
Okay. No, yeah. Nobody said anything. That one's fun. I like the storyline of that one. I like the characters and, never mind. Yes, yeah, it's that one. And then also I'm going to say Coraline.
Oh, that is arguably the most disturbing animated movie I've ever seen.
So
my
great,
daughter
though.
Was not shaken at all until like the spider mom showed up. And I was like, how are you not disturbed up until this point?
Oh, it was terrifying. So something really cool about those button eyes, you know?
Oh, man. Freaking terrifying. How about you, Megan?
First of all, hello, Tasmania. So animated, I feel like you have to have Perfect Blue on the list.
Yes.
And I think Soul Station gets overlooked a lot. Compared
it does.
To
oh my God.
Train to Busan and Peninsula. I really liked it. And then I don't know if Spine of Night really, it's kind of more epic fantasy-ish than horror, but it definitely delves into that a bit. It gets gory, gory, gory. And then The Wolf House, I feel like that's a new one that's also pretty weirdly animated, stop motion, and it's kind of eerie. That one is on Shudder, I believe. It's definitely, I need to check. If it's not on Shudder, it's definitely on another streaming service. So, yeah.
I couldn't really think of many animated horror movies because I don't think I've watched many. I think I watched one of the Dead Space ones, but I think there's a few of them. I never played the game, but the game always looked...
Oh, they're so
good.
Well,
that's not true. That's not true. I tried playing the game and I immediately ran out of ammo because I had no idea that it wasn't going to be like Halo or something where there's going to be ammo everywhere.
That's the thing about survival horror games is they don't want to give you the ammo to just gun your way through it.
Yeah, and I don't appreciate that. I am not a patient enough person. So the only ones I could think of were like my very, very brief foray into anime back when like Sci-Fi Channel was kind of new and they started doing anime like Akira, which I have to consider would be this horror, don't you?
I
mean, it's sci-fi, but God, it's
body
messed
horror.
Up. Yeah, for sure. And Vampire Hunter D. Mm-hmm. is definitely horror. And I was thinking about this. I don't know if it qualifies, but did either of you ever watch The Max on MTV?
Vaguely. No. That was like the liquid television era. Yeah.
Yep, back when they had Aeon Flux.
Yeah, I remember that more than The Max, but I do remember some imagery from that.
Yeah, I think it might have even been within the time that we've been doing the podcast that I found it again on YouTube. Like, all the episodes were on there. And it's actually, like, really beautiful because it's... I don't remember watching it and realizing how much it had to do with, like, mental health and depression and everything else. It's like, this is amazing. And I feel like it did not get maybe the credit it needed because it was just kind of this... All right, MTV's playing cartoons now. Like, what is this weirdness? But yeah, I really like The Max. If I think it's horror or horror adjacent, at least. So
I believe you.
Thanks. And for those of you listening to this and are suddenly like, why does this sound different, aka better? That's thanks to Pacific Obadiah, who is my producer on Creepy and SCP Archives and does a lot of stuff for Bloody Disgusting. He's making us sound better right now.
Yay, go Pacific.
All right, our second question came in via email from Chris Jacobs. What is one aspect or trope that makes a horror movie or show good for you? Interesting. Megan, what are your thoughts on this question?
I think that the thing that pops up in my brain immediately is really innovative scares. I can forgive so much plot-wise if you can get under my skin or scare me, you know, like terrified. I wouldn't say that that's the most coherent plot. It's kind of like walking through a haunted house, but the way that he does scares and the way he changes it up and shows a variety, it's so effective. It's really, it lives up to his name. And then I, you know, even something that's not jump scare heavy, because a good scare does not always have to be like a jump scare. But, you know, I was even thinking of Lee Whannell with The Invisible Man and how there really aren't a whole lot of scares in that. But the way that he uses the camera to make you, really the camera to use negative space to make you think and constantly look for where the Invisible Man might be lurking, it creates a lot of tension. And so just, I think that scares really is what makes me gravitate towards horror. Showing me something I haven't seen or doing something a little bit new twist to it. So scarecrafting is my default.
Nice. How about you, Zena?
Yeah, kind of like what Megan said, but I'm going to go more with just keeping it generalized and just saying, like, I really like jump scares. Like, I know, like, a lot of people, you know, sometimes it could be like, oh, I knew it was coming because, you know, like the sound effects, the music is leading up to it. But I like it. I like the thrill of it. And even though I know it's coming, sometimes it surprises me. And then another thing is I want to go with locations. Like, I love it when sometimes we have a familiar location, but it's obviously all in what they do with that location.
Nice. Yeah, I think maybe to be oversimplifying, kills always makes a difference for me. Kind of like Megan, like just a good scare, but like just something a little bit different, which is something I'll talk about in one of the movies that I watched for this week, where it's like it's familiar, but not. Like the cinematographer or the director or the writer found just a little bit different way to present something that we've seen before and that's familiar. It doesn't have to be a whole new idea or invention or, oh my God, I never thought about that. Just almost just like it's slightly askew from what you're expecting. So it almost feels brand new, despite the fact that it's like, okay, it's a mass killer slashing people or whatever. And I think I have to agree with Zena. For quite a while, I took a pretty hardline stance against jump scares. Mm-hmm. But I think it's when it felt like the horror aspect of the movies was leaning on jump scares. It wasn't the atmosphere, it wasn't, or tension, or even the story, as much as, okay, none of this is really good, so let's have someone jump out! Like, just to, like, let's really remind people this is horror. I think it's the films that are self-aware enough of jump scares that either they fake you into them, like, they make it, like, an open refrigerator, for example. Like clearly the way it's shot from the side, you're expecting the door to close and there's someone behind it. It's finding the balance of how many times do you fake out a jump scare before just having the jump scare? And then can you just go with a jump scare when people are expecting the fake out? Like, there's almost like a science to it, like keeping you on your toes versus let's just lean really hard into this one way or the other. I think I just appreciate a well-crafted jump scare more than anything. More than it's, oh, this is clearly all you've got.
Nice.
All right, speaking of all we've got, welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Podcast, everyone. The podcast where we discuss all the disgusting things we love in the horror world. And to discuss the disgusting, you know her as lead movie critic for Bloody Disgusting, horror movie fanatic and journalist Megan Navarro. Hey, Megan.
Hi.
And you know her from her YouTube channel and website Real Queen of Horror and her infinite love for the genre, Zena Dixon. Hey, Zena.
Hello.
And I'm John. And just to clarify, when I say all we've got, it's all I've got. Zena and Megan have very rich, full lives and careers. If you're listening to this on a Wednesday when the episode drops, we hope your week's been filled with all the best kinds of horror. And if not, we're going to do a quick round the table for the movies, books, games, or anything else in horror that are making the three of us smile right now. Maybe there'll be things that'll make you smile too. So Zena, what's been filling your heart this week?
Guys, it has been another great week for me. Another
two for two.
Yeah, like, oh my god, joy. So the first movie I want to talk about, the French supernatural horror Live It from 2011 on Shudder. It was my first time watching this one. I always heard about it, but for some reason I could never find it streaming anywhere, so I missed out in life. But until last week, actually, it was like, whoa, my life has been enhanced. So this is about a young woman named Lucy. And she kind of starts off kind of, I want to say, like as this caregiver assistant. And they're going to like different clients' homes and helping them. And, you know, there's this one woman's home. She lives in this beautiful, isolated mansion. Okay. And this woman is in a coma. And there's just something, you know, off about her. But because you know, you're watching a horror movie, so you know what to expect. But yeah, you know, the woman, again, she's in a coma, and supposedly there's a hidden treasure that's in her house, and it's never been found. Like, the family searched for it. They couldn't find it. And there are, like, locks throughout her house and stuff. So anyway, this is from the directors who did Inside, but they also did our favorite, The Deep House. Yeah. Remember we all liked it? Okay.
We did. Yeah, I remember that. I haven't forgotten.
You guys remember we talked about
it? Yeah, we talked about
episode,
it.
Dirt Trio episode. Approved. We did that.
Yeah, so
and it's on Hulu, yay.
And I didn't know that this was by them until obviously like the credits and stuff like that. But anyway, so, you know, again, she's training with her at her new job and stuff like that. This woman just seems, she doesn't really seem cold-hearted who's training her. She just seems like she's about doing the job. And this woman who's in a coma, like her nails are like really extremely long. It's like she doesn't have any family, supposedly. She had a daughter, but the daughter died. Point is, it was a day for this young woman named Lucy. She meets up with her boyfriend and she's just having a conversation with him and she tells him about her day and she mentions the house. The boyfriend has this idea that they should break into the house. They should try to find the treasure because he's sick of working on a boat and coming home and smelling like fish. He wants the luxurious life. He wants to live fancy. And they also decide to like drag his brother along. So they're probably like in their 20s. They go to the house. And yeah, some crazy stuff starts to happen. A lot of stuff goes wrong, obviously, when they're looking for this supposed treasure. There's a lot of supernatural elements. There's violence. There's a lot of blood. But even though it's all those things, there's something really beautiful about it. It kind of felt like a giallo, but it also kind of felt like a fairy tale. So if you're interested in checking this one out, I recommend it. I had a nice time with it. It was very soothing to my soul. So, yeah. Then the next movie I watched, thanks to Megan. Megan approved this movie, Fresh 2022.
What? I did not approve this one.
What? Oh. I thought you said that you liked it.
I don't like it.
Oh, my God. I could have sworn that you told us last week that you liked it. I mean, it is a little awkward, but okay. But I mean, I like it.
I am glad. A lot of people like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I thought maybe it was a different movie we talked about then. Last
Maybe.
Week, because
yeah,
we were talking about how it was dumped on Hulu. I mean, not
no
that it's
exit.
Horrible, but But yeah, it's just kind of weird that it's I'm surprised, you know, but Hulu has been stepping it up. Anyway, so fresh from 2022 on Hulu, the horrors of modern dating are seen through the eyes of a young woman who is battling to survive her new boyfriend's unusual appetite. Yeah, I had a lot of fun with this movie. The movie opens up with this woman who's, you know, she's been dating around, doing online dating. And I don't know that life because I'm married and I'm glad that I don't. Okay, I heard that it's hard out there, so... be blessed to people who are dealing with this. But yeah, there's a woman again, like she's going on all these bad dates. I mean, her first date is horrible. Like, can you imagine? But anyway, but yeah, where the guy pretty much insults her and stuff. And then one day, unexpected, she's in the supermarket and there's this man named Steve who kind of approaches her. And, you know, he was kind of cute, you know, he made a joke. It was a little geeky, but it was still cute. I was like, oh, look at you, Steve, you know, so good job for Steve doing that. It was like a little pickup line, but it worked and stuff like that. And they hit it off. We see them together. It's kind of like, I felt like it was like a rom-com. I kind of forgot that I was watching that, but I knew it was coming soon. And it has a really cool cast. I do not remember her name, but this isn't a horror or anything like that. But there's this actress who plays her friend Molly. She's in this series called 20s, and she looks completely different. Like, I love it when I see like an actor transform, because she normally doesn't look like that at all. Huh. So I thought it was really cool. Like, her mannerisms changed and everything. And I know it's like, oh, that's the job of an actor. But sometimes, okay, that doesn't happen. So my recommendation for this one, if you are interested in checking it out, do not watch a trailer. Do not read any reviews. Even the synopsis actually isn't that bad, so that's fine. And obviously I just read it. But I recommend going in. And the guy, Sebastian Stan, who played Steve, I've seen him in other things before, but he gave like a really chilling performance. Very much believable, where it's just like, you know, because like I said, I would have fell for that little line that he did, and next thing you know, yow.
Yow.
Okay, yeah, so that's what I watched.
I can't follow up yow.
You can just end your stuff with yow.
Yow. Yow. I watched a Xena movie. I feel like it's a Xena movie. Have you seen?
I have.
This was a movie that I watched a lot when I rented it on video as a teen, and then haven't seen it since, and finally tracked it down on DVD. It's 1996's Little Witches, right in the same arena as like The Craft. And I like IMDb synopsis because it's short and to the point, which is a group of girls at a Catholic boarding school get mixed up in the occult.
Took a wrong turn.
They get mixed up in the occult. No, there's like
went down the wrong aisle.
The good girl gets left behind. Her mom is more interested in dating, so she doesn't pick her up for holiday. And then the other ones are bad children, and they get stuck there. But the church so happens to be having some construction and uncovers like this boarded off satanic altar. You know, there's a well, there's a book, they get involved. It is like satanic witchcraft. It's The Craft, but not, you know, we're corrupted by powers. We're corrupted by Satan. So it is totally a Xena movie. And I knew she had to have seen this because it ticks off all of the buttons. You got the witchcraft, it was direct to video, but it's got this made for TV vibe minus some nudity. Like, if made for TV could have nudity, that would be this type of aesthetic and vibe. And there is a little bit of a silliness, but it's okay. Like, I don't think that I love it as much as I loved it as a teen, but I do love getting to revisit movies that I'd forgotten from yesteryear. And I like the kind of spin on this witchcraft. You know, they're literally satanic witches. You know, they don't know what they're really getting into, but they do. And it has Jennifer Rubin, who I absolutely loved. She's from Nightmare on Elm Street 3. She's a nun with a fanny pack, which is adorable. Zelda Rubinstein, she's not in it too much. She's mostly kind of red herring. And yeah, I will say also that it's not helping this made-for-TV vibe is they've got a guy in there as the love interest, and he cannot act. I'm pretty sure they cast him because he looked good shirtless. But yeah, so I watched that. And then because I really, really liked the new horror-tinged Batman, I watched Darkman on Shudder. This was Sam Raimi's 1990 superhero movie. A brilliant scientist left for dead returns to exact revenge on the people who burned him alive. It really is like Sam Raimi's take on like a comic book movie meets Universal Classic Monsters. And I haven't seen this one in a long time either. And I just love how Sam Raimi shoots things. Like they're one of the early, it's almost like your requisite comic book formula where he's systematically taking out all the henchmen before his final confrontation. And Ted Raimi, Sam Raimi's brother, is one of the early henchmen that gets taken out. And the way that he shoots it is like, Darkman pops him up through a manhole. And
like he's a puppet.
It's like a puppet. And it's very this Evil Dead-like. But the camera work is so Sam Raimi. But it's so stylish because it's Sam Raimi. So yeah, I enjoyed it, obviously. And I'm going to revisit the other two that are on Shudder as well.
Yeah, but they don't. But it's not Liam Neeson.
It's not Liam Neeson. It's not Sam Raimi. But you know, the direct-to-video means they might get a little bit more hard in that R rating, so that maybe that compensates a little. I don't know.
Yeah, I watched them years and years. I was probably a teenager watching them on like Cinemax or something, yeah, like late night. Because it's the guy. I don't remember the actor's name, but he's like the henchman in the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie Hard Target. He's been in a few things too. He's got a very like ominous appearance, so it's interesting seeing him as like the good guy. But yeah, I was curious too because I think I saw all three of those.
Are you
on
talking
Shudder,
about like who takes over for Darkman in the second and third? That I cannot remember his name, but he's Imhotep in The Mummy.
Exactly. Yes, yeah. Thank you. And I have found out that our callers are willing to call in to tell us exactly what we said wrong.
Oh.
When we couldn't remember the president's name in 24.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's fine. Neither have I. But again, why I know that reference, I have no idea.
Probably
from like Always Sunny in Philadelphia or something like that. I discovered a movie I'd never heard of. I don't think I'd ever heard of any of you or any of you.
You haven't heard of Xena or me?
I've never heard of you two. Where am I? What is this?
What is today?
I'd never heard of this movie at all, which is interesting because I love Lance Henriksen. So I don't know if this is just one that totally got pushed under the rug or what. But it's 1989's The Horror Show on Tubi. Detective McCarthy finally catches Meat Cleaver Max, a serial killer who promises revenge during his execution. Nonetheless, a parapsychologist tells the detective that the only hope of stopping Max for good is to destroy his spirit. Which is, again, IMDb is like not trying. To be fair, I'd never heard of this, so the fact that it's got a synopsis at all, I suppose, counts for something. This one was fascinating because I saw it on Tubi. I think I saw that like Lance Henriksen was starring in it as I was just scrolling through the horror section. And I looked up the trailer first out of curiosity, and they make it sound like it's going to be a new horror franchise.
Can I blow your mind?
Ooh, go.
So this was released as House 3 in a lot of markets.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Okay. Yeah. So
didn't the guy work
it's like
on
House
one, of them?
1, House 2, House 3 is the horror show. And that's why there's no actual House 3 and they skip to House 4.
Oh, so they're treating it like the house that they're in is the house, like the furnace is hot.
It's like the typical madness. Europe thing where they will title it as part of a franchise it's not actually part of. But it totally threw hiccups into the wrench. And that's why if you want the official house, like it's House 1, House 2, House 4, and then the horror show.
I just like that you said hiccups into the wrench.
Hiccups into the wrench. I have no idea what I'm saying. I'm just throwing trivia. I have to use that from now on. Yeah, I don't know what that means. That's
but it was interesting because the trailer made it sound like this was Meet Cleaver Max was gonna like take over for Freddy and Jason, and like this was gonna be some ongoing thing, which is interesting because the movie doesn't really leave itself open to a sequel, and it's just it's super gory, cheesy, over the top, almost Shocker-esque, but not. Quite, yeah. Although this would have been before Shocker was 90-something, wasn't it?
I thought it was 89 as well, right?
Oh, I wonder if this is just another one of those Hollywood examples of, I have an idea. Someone hears about the idea. I do too. Let's make it really quick.
It would make sense because I'm pretty sure Sean S. Cunningham produced it, and he is the yep. king of that.
Yep, it is. It was Sean S. Cunningham. I remember seeing that in the opening credits, so that would totally make sense. I mean, I still like it. It's cheesy. It's Lance Henriksen. It's very confusing because I think the trailer, and I looked it up later on Wikipedia too because I was confused about something, and the plot synopsis wasn't any better there. The plot synopsis there, if I recall, or one of them mentions that he sells his soul to the devil. That is not a part of the movie. That is in no way, shape, or form even mentioned as being a part of the movie. Like, I kept waiting. Like, I was like, is there like going to be a scene where he talks to the devil or something? Nope, not at all. It's just silliness. It's strange campiness. It doesn't quite make sense, but there's some interesting effects, some interesting like hallucination that go on. And I don't know. It's weird. It's just weird. Like late 80s. Over the top gore trying to capitalize on a pre-existing franchise or a potential franchise or anything like that.
But you had fun and with it.
I did. I had a ton of fun with it. I'd totally watch it again. I think it's leaving Tubi soon. I think that's what I saw, like the leaving soon, and that's why I wanted to check it out. So 1989's The Horror Show. That was the other thing that confused me. Like, why is it called The Horror Show?
There's no show.
No, there's like one hallucination where there's a TV show like happening, but it's like that's not the premise of this at all. And then I finally watched 2022's Scream 5, which I rented. 25 years after the original series of murders in Woodsboro, a new ghost face emerges and Sidney Prescott must return to uncover the truth. So without diving too deeply into this, which we are going to do on Patreon after this, I need to watch it again. I got a little bit lost.
Interesting.
I'm going to admit.
Okay.
There's some family tree stuff going on that I got a little bit confused by when I was watching it, like more because it wasn't just that I was trying to learn who the characters were, the new characters. It was also, and how is this relation happening? So it's what I need to talk through on Patreon. Yep. It's part of why I want to talk about it on Patreon. Right. I think I need you to explain
this,
some stuff.
This is
to
the
me.
Spoiler-free zone.
Exactly. That said, this is what I was talking about earlier, where things are presented just a little bit differently from what I was expecting out of the franchise. Part of it was the kills, like the actual kills themselves, despite the fact that they're the Scream movies, and there's a couple of kills that are particularly bloody through the previous four films. I don't remember it feeling like as visceral as some of these kills did. Like, some of these kills seemed a lot more brutal.
You need to go back and watch Scream 4.
Yeah,
Or even Scream. I mean, that first one like that ends with, like...
Yeah, the first one's bad, but it's such a quick zoom in. And I feel like this one lingers on what's happening a lot more.
Maybe so, but Scream 4 has that whole bedroom massacre of that poor girl.
Oh,
that's like,
yeah,
completely...
but don't you just see the...
You see her hanging out of the window as she's being murdered, and then you see the aftermath, which just really sets it home because the entire room is painted red.
Megan's talking me out of liking this movie.
Now, I'm not trying to talk you out of liking this movie. I'm just trying to say that, you know, there are a lot of brutal kills in the franchise.
That I don't have a reliable memory, Megan? The guy who forgets on a week-by-week basis what you two have watched, even though I'm the one who goes through and edits the audio.
So, we appreciate you.
Oh, thank you. I don't... I don't know. Like, there was some of it. I mean, you were saying, like, Easter eggs aplenty. I didn't read your article because I watched it over the weekend and I didn't want to see any or read any spoilers or anything. Yeah, it felt like pretty much every scene was an Easter egg to a previous movie in one way or another. I liked it. And honestly, for the fifth in a franchise, it's probably the best fifth in any franchise that there's ever been.
Yeah.
And I had to kind of think about it that way, too. I don't know that any horror franchise has been able to sustain itself as well as Scream has. Most franchises, especially once they hit like number three, it's rough. And granted, Scream 3 wasn't great. Scream 3 was super campy in a kind of a weird way. But I also still like watching Scream 3.
Yeah.
For like different reasons, though, like more irony than anything else. Thing. And Lance Henriksen's in it. But yeah, I am impressed at the level of, I don't know if care is the right word. Maybe it's something to do with like Wes's legacy and people wanting to do a good job and not just turn it into ostensibly a money grab. But I'm definitely impressed with what they've been able to do across so many movies. No spoilers for all the things I need to talk through on Patreon. Check that out. It's on patreon.com/bedisgustingpod. Okay, before we move on, what do we watch and how do we watch it?
So I checked out Live It on Shudder and Fresh on Hulu.
I watched Little Witches on DVD and Dark Man on Shudder.
And I watched The Horror Show on Tubi and Scream 5 on VOD. All right, enough about what we've been watching this week. It's time for Megan to bring us up to speed on the news and trending topics in the world of horror. So what's going on, Megan?
A surprising movie dropped a trailer last week that caught everybody's attention. This became a very buzzy title, and I'm very shocked by this. The Amityville Horror franchise, they were a legit franchise. And then, you know, copyright, you know, loose copyrights meant that the floodgates opened, so pretty much anybody can have a go at Amityville, which means that not only do you have all the Amityville movies, you've got Amityville Uprising, which is zombies, the Amityville Moon, which apparently might be werewolf related, and even Amityville Shark House. So up next is Amityville in Space, which has an official trailer and a poster from Wild Eye Releasing. Pack your bags for a frightening intergalactic stay at Amityville. So the ultimate battle against Amityville curse begins after the infamous murder house is exorcised from Earth and reappears in outer space in Amityville in Space. This is from the director of Sharkula, which is, I guess, is a Dracula shark, Mark Polonia, and starring Titus Himmelberger, Cassandra Hayes, Tim Hatch, Ryan Dalton, and Jeff Kirkendall. And it's going to release in July this year. So I'm pretty sure that the title and poster alone set people into a frenzy.
Yeah, I didn't even click on the article because I almost thought it was just a joke from Bloody Disgusting. I saw the title and I was like, no, that's... it's too early in the morning for me to read this. This can't be a thing.
I mean, but I'm still going to watch it. So, like, you know, and even when it comes to, like, this whole franchise, like, the more it goes on, the more and more it just gets silly. But this is by far the most insane thing. And this is no shade to the director or writer.
No.
But I feel like this should really encourage people. If you have a movie idea, you need to go for it. Follow your dreams.
I agree. I kind of feel like this speaks to what we talked about before, where I think that horror audiences are just ready for fun. Like, we're done with the trauma horror. We've had a lot of that lately. Let's have fun. And what's more bonkers than sending a haunted house to space? And Xena, I'm begging, I don't even have to ask. I know you'll do it. But I need to know if that creature with the weird legs coming out of its cheeks is somehow in this movie, because that could be a game changer for me. Cheek Monster House. So yeah, there's that. And then Will Smith and Michael B. Jordan, they are teaming up as stars and producers of I Am Legend sequel. It's been over a decade since Will Smith's 2007 hit I Am Legend toppled global box office. It made bank. Original director Francis Lawrence, though, had long ago passed on returning, openly discussing in interviews and stuff that he felt a sequel or prequel would feel forced. Well, Warner Brothers is finally moving forward without him, and a new sequel is in development. Smith is returning for the next chapter, and so is Black Panther's Michael B. Jordan, who will also produce. They both together with their box office, that's a whole lot of money there. Oscar winner and producer Akiva Goldsman, who adapted the Richard Matheson 1954 novel that the movie's based on, he's also returning to write the follow-up. Plot details obviously are under lock and key and not known at this time. The 2007 film saw Smith's Dr. Robert Neville wander alone through New York City, calling out for possible survivors, and works on finding a cure for the plague using his own immune blood. He knows he's badly outnumbered, the odds are against him, and all the while, the infected wait for him to make a mistake that will deliver Neville into their hands. Considering how the first one concluded Neville's story, I am very curious to see how they're going to approach this. And also, for the record, I am still not over the dog.
Yeah, I remember seeing this as a DVD rental. Mm-hmm. And this was back when they would actually show the alternate endings on DVDs and like the special feature sections. Mm-hmm. And I'm confused. I don't remember what the actual ending is. You don't need to say here for people who haven't seen I Am Legend. But that was the same thing I thought. It was like Will Smith and Michael B. Jordan. I'm like, I don't remember what ending I saw that was the theatrical version. So I'm like, I don't know how this movie's going to happen, or am I wrong? No spoilers by any of the clues that I just dropped there. But yeah, I'll be curious for sure.
Same, but I'm kind of intrigued, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I really did like the movie and stuff. I mean, I feel like it's been like really long. I wish that they kind of would have did it sooner, but it's fine, you know. I'm still gonna check it out.
I
was just gonna say, I love the cat. I love Michael B. Jordan. So
I recently saw a scene, and I had only watched it like when I rented it. I think I've only seen it the one time, so I don't remember this, but I guess there's one scene, and I remember adoring this scene when Will Smith basically has a mental breakdown and yells at this mannequin. Like this mannequin that he's like, no, like he's actually like yelling at him like a person. And I guess in the film, like the mannequin's head does turn a little bit. Like you actually see it on screen turn a little bit. But like the point is to like emphasize like his psychosis of what's happening. Like he actually does think he sees this happening. Like this is, it's like a Wilson sort of thing. Like,
yeah,
he's told,
like it's one of like, and I think Will Smith is a really good actor. He's fantastic in Ali.
Yeah.
But that was one of my favorite like Will Smith moments, when he just like loses it and yells at that mannequin. So yeah, I could do more of that.
There you go. We're putting it out there. John needs more mannequin yelling in the sequel, stat.
Yeah. Just Will Smith yelling at a mannequin for like 90 minutes. Could just be like in a Target. That's fine.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, that's an easy sequel. That'll make you happy. And what could be easily the most unexpected news of the year? I mean, at least so far, because it is only March. Evil Dead and Don't Breathe director Fede Alvarez will both write and direct a brand new Alien movie for Ridley Scott and 20th Century Studios. It is described as an original standalone feature. Ridley Scott, who of course directed the original 1979 Alien and later returned for prequels Prometheus and Alien Covenant, will produce via his scot-free banner. The project is intended to be made for Hulu as part of 20th Century's ambitions to make more than 10 movies a year for the Disney-owned streaming service. Obviously, mm-hmm. horror-wise, two of those projects are David Bruckner-directed Hellraiser Reimagining and the Predator prequel Prey, both on the slate for 2022. Alvarez's take is being kept deep inside the studio's chest, but sources described it as unconnected, which we already mentioned. Alvarez is a rabid fan of the franchise and casually pitched a take to Scott many years ago. The idea remained implanted in Scott's brain until late last year when he called Alvarez out of the blue and asked him if he was still up to make it. Alvarez didn't have to be asked twice. That's very intriguing for me. 20th Century Division president Steve Asbell said of Alvarez's strong pitch, "It was just a really good story with a bunch of characters you haven't seen before." He's Alvarez is fresh off of producing the brand new Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is currently on Netflix. And as a related note, FX does have the Alien project in the works, a planned Alien television series from Noah Hawley that's totally unrelated to this that's expected in 2023.
I'm captivated. I like Fede Alvarez. I like the way he shoots movies. So, and I'm a little bit disenchanted with how the Alien franchise has gone, so we'll see. I kind of hope they go a little bit more minimalistic.
Keep like, it simple, kind of pull, yeah.
Pull it back to like the original Alien.
Yeah.
Like, let's just like remember what it was like that. It doesn't need to go bigger. It's gone big. It's gone plenty big. We can pull it back. I think he's a good guy for it. So, all right, listeners, your turn. Think more horror needs to go to space and follow in the footsteps of Amityville Horror, Friday the 13th, Hellraiser, Critters, Dracula, and Leprechaun. Do you remember how I Am Legend ended? Let's hear about it. You can call us or text us at 224-475-1040. The number is also in the show notes, or feel free to email us like a friend Elliot at bedisgustingpodcast@gmail.com. Finally, Xena is going to make all our lives easier in the sea of horror movie options and clue us in on what's appearing soon that we should be watching. So Xena, what should we be watching?
So, we have some cool stuff coming out this week. So, first thing, Tuesday the 8th, we have Heckle. It will be available on VOD. A stand-up comedian encounters a seemingly insane heckler who becomes the stalker. Well, becomes his stalker. And he pretty much takes it on a completely different level. The poster's really cool, by the way. So, if we were in a video store and you saw it, I'm pretty sure most people would pick it. I would. Then on Thursday, the 11th, we have The Seed coming to Shudder, which starts out as a girl's weekend away in the desert, becomes a tale of horror, death, and alien invasion. And that's another one with another spicy poster, too. Then we also have for Thursday, Mickey Keaton's Off Season. It'll be available on VOD. And this one stars Jocelyn Donahue. So she was in The House of the Devil. She was also in Summer Camp. And then also Richard Blake, who's in 31. He played the character Doomhead. So this one follows, the synopsis is, after receiving a mysterious letter, a woman travels to an island town and soon becomes trapped in a nightmare. Then we still have two more. Two more, guys. Next, we have the slow burn horror, Knocking. It'll just be exclusively on Arrow. It used to be on Tubi, I believe, but I think that they recently removed it. So this is why. A woman leaves a ward after a nervous breakdown, only to start hearing mysterious knocking sounds in her apartment. And then finally, we have the sci-fi horror Ultrasound. It will be coming to VOD. After his car breaks down, Glenn spends one hell of an odd night with a married couple, setting into motion a chain of events that alter their lives, plus several random strangers. And just in case, John already spoke about it, but Scream is available on VOD. So if you didn't get a chance to check it out in theaters, yay, you can check it out. And then also Bloody Disgusting TV and Screenbox is available for you and your eyeballs.
I'm still catching up on Freddy's Nightmares.
It's a lot.
There's a lot of them, and they're an hour long. And that's the Bloody Disgusting podcast for this week. Everyone, if you'd like to read more from Megan, you can check out her reviews at bloodydisgusting.com and on Twitter at HauntedMeg. Xena can be found on her own website, realqueenofhorror.com, and the YouTube channel of the same name, or at LovelyXena on Twitter. And you can hear me on my weekly horror narration podcast, Creepy. And don't forget to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Feel free to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at BeDisgustingPod, or drop us an email at BeDisgustingPodcast@gmail.com. And for even more content and rewards, like the conversation on Scream 5 we're about to have, check us out on Patreon.com/BeDisgustingPod. So for this week, I'm John.
I'm Megan.
I'm Xena.
Grab some popcorn, cozy up on the couch, and watch something you love. Just make sure it's something bloody.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM podcast network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.